Welcome to episode 14 of the EFL Magazine Business Podcast. Today's guest is Jenny Dooley. Jenny is the president of Express Publishing. She holds a Master of Education degree from the University of Wales, Swansea. She's been a teacher, teacher trainer, and author in the EFL field for more than 20 years. She's traveled extensively, delivering seminars and holding workshops in Latin America, Europe, the Middle East, and Asia. She's the owner and manager of one of the piloting schools used by Express Publishing and is the president of HEC, a language exams distribution center. I had a great chat with Jenny and I really hope you enjoy the program.
Hey everyone, buckle up for a new episode of the EFL Magazine Business Podcast, the one and only podcast made to help you launch your business or take your existing business to a level of success you could never have imagined. Whether you're a school owner, freelancer, publisher, or other entrepreneur, you're sure to pick up lots of actionable advice when you listen to the EFL Magazine Business Podcast. Remember to visit EFLmagazine.com for great articles and features. Without further ado, here's your host, the founder of EFL Magazine, Philip Pound.
Hello again, and welcome to the EFL Magazine Business Podcast. It's my great pleasure today to introduce Jenny Dooley to you, and Jenny is the president of Express Publishing. Jenny, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on your podcast. It's a pleasure to be here, and although I'm saying I'm great, I'm still, you know, not feeling great at not being able to travel around the world as I used to.
Okay. And how has your life changed? Because I know from speaking to George, who I know quite well, been in touch over the years, that Express do a lot of travel. That's a big part of your business. Yeah.
We have a team of experts all over the world, actually. They're posted in many countries around the world. And we do travel very frequently, wherever there's a convention or wherever there is like a seminar, an academic seminar, an educational seminar, anything that has to do with ELT. We're always on a plane or in a suitcase traveling around the world, all of us.
Okay. Yeah, so you're on the road. So you're missing it a lot?
Oh, so much. A friend of mine recently sent me a meme that he found somewhere. For those who miss traveling, there was this little meme, you know, like on the treadmill, you put on your suitcase and you pick it up and you pretend it's the airport, you know?
Yeah. So let's hope we'll all be able to travel soon. Just before this call, actually speaking to Ron Moraine, and Ron said that his university, they've decided to have all online classes until 2022. So how do you see it working out? Just 2021 is going to be,
I'm sure we're going to have to do the same, because we're getting the same messages from all over the world, including our piloting school here. We do the same too. And it's logical, because according to this situation that we're living here right now and everywhere around the world, the virus is still spreading and it's still, you know, affecting a lot of people and a lot of economies. So all the countries are just opening and shutting and closing and opening back up again, you know, all kinds of businesses. And thankfully, education is one of the businesses that has been least affected so far. It has been affected, but it has been least affected because at least, thankfully, we were able to quickly adjust and go into online lessons. You can't eat online. You can't go on holidays online. There's, you know, a lot of other businesses that are suffering tremendously with this pandemic.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about Express Publishing. What's the background?
What would you like to know about Express Publishing?
Well, you can go right back to the beginning if you'd like.
Well, basically, Express Publishing is a family-owned company. It started very small by working in a couple of countries around the world to begin with, and then it expanded, and right now it has a activity in over 100 countries all over the world. Express Publishing creates mostly ELT material for students who want to learn English as a second or foreign language. And we do have an extensive catalog of our material. It's like over 4,000 or 5,000 books right now. We also started working in online learning. The last 5 years, we developed our own platform. And now we're getting into the field of other subjects too. So slowly we're expanding and developing and trying new ventures.
Oh, okay. And
that's in a nutshell.
Okay, fantastic. What I've always noticed about Express is that you're very positive and you're always, looking to expand, looking at new markets, looking at new ideas. Does that come from you?
That's true. Well, actually, I think it was a combination. It started off from Virginia and I'm continuing it. The difference is that by comparison to my late mother, I'm a little bit more technologically involved. So my field of expertise would be, not field of expertise, I would say my interest, let's say, is more, into technology. So how can I incorporate systems like blended learning and all kinds of technological advances? Like lately, we've developed an AR system for some of our material with an actual character. We are going into gaming and gamification, into learning through online material. So we are expanding into different fields, but fields which are somehow connected to education, always connected to education. Yeah, and this is something that we really like and we really enjoy. I find it very creative and I'm very enthusiastic about it.
Okay, and the business originally was ELT, was it? Was that where,
yes,
where it began? Yeah,
it started as ELT. Yes, it's always been ELT. Yeah.
And how long ago was that? When did the?
I think it was 1988. We've recently celebrated 36 years of presence in the world. So we're fairly young, I would say, as a company. But we've managed to do a lot of things during those few years that we've been around. Mostly, we're very proud of our academic standards and our high academic standards, I would say. And this is why a lot of, and our diversity, I would say, too, our speed. This is why a lot of ministers of education like working with us, because we are very versatile, very quick to adjust. We do a lot of things according to their needs.
Mm. Okay. So you started off in Greece first, and how and when did you expand?
We started off with three different countries, Turkey, Greece, and Poland, and then we expanded all over the world. And of course, we also have the office in the UK too. Let's not forget about that.
And tell me about that.
Now more and more, the UK is becoming more and more active and we're expanding more and more. And we're having more and more people and freelance authors working from the UK, based in the UK now, because in the beginning it was kind of complicated. Since our piloting school was here, we had to have more in-house authors. But as the years go by and as I'm running the show, basically on my own, I'm always looking for new authors, because I'm kind of spread thin right now between managing the company and being an author myself. So I'm always in the lookout for new authors, new editors from all around the world. And now, thankfully, again, with online technology, it is much easier for us. So our base now is, again, in an airplane.
Yeah.
And we travel all over the world and we meet with our partners everywhere.
Okay. So you started off in three countries and you began to get a little bit of traction. But, there's a lot of very established players in the ELT market, some very big names. I don't think I have to mention who they are, but anybody here. So how did you go about coming up against these companies? What kind of competitive advantage do you have versus them?
We basically went with our quality, let's put it like that. Our difference, and this is what we were trying to do, since we are all educators, the people who, all the editors that work for us and all the authors, we're all currently educators of ELT, we basically used our best practices and we put them down on paper. And I help sometimes all of my authors and all of my editors from all the countries. And I always, you know, fine tune them. And I always put my hands in the new products, you know, and give them a little bit of my know-how, how I want the material to be designed and created and put together. So it's very practical too. It puts the theory into practice. Let's put it like that. And it's quite high in quality standards. We don't spare any expenses when it comes to the creation of the material, even if that means that sometimes we might not get 100% our investment back. Because for us, education, especially language education, you can't compromise with that. You can't have sales, you know what I mean, in language education. You have to be of the highest standard and the highest quality. Here, we're talking about forming future generations and formulating opinions about the world. Because, you know, you probably know this, that nowadays in EFL books, it's not just grammar and vocabulary. I mean, this was like, I don't know, even 50, 60 years ago. Now, you have articles and up-to-date issues that deal with every aspect of our society. So you can't play around with that. You can't just have a little text, do a little bit of reading, do a little bit of comprehension, and off you go. We go deeply into general knowledge, critical thinking, debates, discussions, everything that the students will need to not only use the language, but use this language in a creative and useful way for them, for their futures. So, and for their lives, generally speaking, whether it's vocational or school, academic, whatever it is, we try to make sure that we cover all aspects that they need to learn, basically.
Okay. So we'll go back a little bit about you, Jenny. Tell me a little bit about your background in like academia and entrepreneurship.
Okay, well, yeah. Clearly, I'm a little bit more UK raised, as you can guess. I've studied in the UK. I got my master's degree from the UK. I've got my TEFLs and so on, in languages and so on. But I've been going back and forth to the UK since I was 5 years old. Basically, I've lived half of my life in the UK. I'm still going back and forth to the UK. Especially, and my kids the same too. The new generation of Express Publishing is also UK raised. Basically, I got into teaching when I was about 16, if I remember correctly, 15, 16, about that time. Obviously, that was not a legal way of teaching back then, but I saw something that was missing at that time in language education. I wanted to experiment with students who had learning difficulties, with students who actually, I wanted to research why some students had problems getting up to speed with the rest of the students in the classroom. So I started working with in remedial classes with students who were kind of slower, let's put it like that, as learners. And I found ways of getting through to them and motivating them and triggering them into and stimulating, you know, their learning, which I found very pleasant and very, very intriguing to deal with these kinds of situations. And that's basically when I started. And then I started writing material based on my findings. Mm-hmm. So that's how I started.
Okay. And I'm just looking at your bio here. It's fantastic. Yeah. So you've traveled extensively. Traveled extensively.
Well, travel again. Don't take my kids away.
And you're owner and manager of one of the piloting schools used by Express Publishing. So tell me about that school.
Well, we have our own piloting school here, which has about 2,000 students, where basically it's like our own lab. Let's put it like that. So every time I want to create something new, I just run next doors where the piloting school is and I test it and discuss it with the students. Apart from that, I also have a lot of schools from around the world, including this country too, including Greece, where basically we discuss new products, they give me their opinions. Sometimes I pilot material into other schools for research. So the piloting school is our own lab. So our own editors and authors, they get first-hand experience. Not only that, but we also use it for teacher training purposes, because there are teachers and ELT experts that come from all over the world to actually see how we teach, and when we teach specific things and how in different age groups and different styles of teaching, whatever. So we always use this as a lab, of course, with certain rules and regulations, making sure that all private matters are kept, you know, all this GDPR now craziness has hit all over the world. So we make sure that none of the information of the students are leaked or anything like that. But we do use that as a lab to show our colleagues around the world how things, how the magic is done. Let's put it like that.
Okay. And you've, in the creation of children's theater groups, which aim stimulate young learners' imaginations. Tell me about that.
That's my passion. I actually have my own theater too. My own studio, my own theater. As a child, you know, when I was going back and forth to the UK, I guess that my teachers in the UK realized that I have a flair for the dramatic, let's put it like that. So they actually told my parents back then that you shouldn't leave this unattended. This, she has something there. She has some sort of a drama flair in her. So my parents let me explore this a little bit further. And that's when I started doing a little bit later from what I told you about the remedial classes. I started getting into teaching English to drama. And I started having my own sessions here in the Paddington School with our students. And I've seen that this worked miraculously. And I've actually created a series which helps not only people who know this methodology of how to teach English through drama, but even, you know, inexperienced teachers, completely inexperienced teachers, on how to touch upon this methodology a little bit. And I've gone around the world and I've seen students do exactly the things I wanted them to do with my material. And I was very happy about that. Oh, yes, I love directing my kids, and my kids love me as a director.
Mm-hmm. So you've got your teaching background, methodology, and president of Express Publishing. So how does this all come together?
With great difficulty, I have to say. With great difficulty. As you can now probably guess, my forte is creativity. I'm a very, very creative person, and I've got a very wild imagination, very, very vivid imagination. Gina used to say that I'm one of the think tanks of the company because ideas keep flowing constantly. I mean, I literally see things in my dream and I wake up and I jot them down and I put them into action the next day. But managing a company with about 500 people all over the world and dealing with contracts and dealing with exports and imports and printing and binding and, you know, putting all of that together, I have to say that I have to rely on my very, very, very well-qualified personnel on that. And thankfully, I have wonderful people around me, fantastic teams that surround me, that are very highly trained, that are very quick thinkers, and they're all visionaries. They all believe in us. They are members of our family, let's put it like that, because we believe in Express that we're all a big, happy family. So they help a lot with everything. I'd be lost without them, let's put it like that. I can't live without my teams.
Okay, so for our listeners who maybe are entrepreneurs, business owners, school owners out there, managing a company of 500 employees sounds daunting, and it sounds maybe a little bit a step or two above what some people who are listening are experiencing now. So give me some tips. Yeah.
It is daunting. Well, first of all, you need to believe in your people, and your people need to believe in you and your product, whatever this product is, whether it's a language school or whether it's a publishing house, whatever it is that you're creating, knowledge or paper or books, whatever, people need to believe in that. If they don't believe in that, there's no point to be there. It's absolutely no point. You're just like, you know, beating a dead horse. There's no point. So you need to have very close contact with every one of your employees as much as possible. You need to be close to them as a human being, first of all. Close connections, I think, are very important. And basically, we need to listen to each other. Don't, you know, some of my employees say that, Jenny, you're not a boss, you're a leader. I don't just say, okay, it's going to be my way or the highway. I always listen to their suggestions. Sometimes I choose to ignore them, obviously. Sometimes I actually put them into practice. But I believe that brainstorming and bouncing ideas off each other helps a lot in whatever we create, whatever we put together. And that kind of softens the blow of managing such a huge organization. So capable hands, qualified people help always.
So this seems to be something I'm hearing over the interviews I've been doing, is that first of all, you believe you have a great product or products. Yes. in your case. You get employees to believe in the product, and if the product is good, obviously that will follow, and you get people who are passionate about that. And absolutely. So there's a takeaway
the
there.
Definitely, that's the best combination. People who believe in you, believe in the product, and they're passionate about it, and they're willing to go the extra mile to do whatever it takes to make the company known, the product known, their work known. Basically, that's the winning ticket there. Believing in what you're doing and working with your soul in it, you know, enjoying what you're doing. If you don't enjoy what you're doing, just, you know, change job. You can't teach. You can't teach if you don't enjoy it. You can't manage people if you don't enjoy it. It's impossible, because managing people is also in a micro scale teaching too sometimes, you know. It's like classroom management, only the kids are not 5 or 6 year olds. They're like adults sometimes, you know, and you have to teach them how to work together in harmony and put sometimes personal feelings aside and work towards a greater goal together. It's all part of education, you know.
Mm. So you told me your employees say you're more like a leader and not a boss. And you're obviously a person with a lot of energy and great ideas. I'm not trying to flatter you here. But okay. But what do you think you need to work on?
What do I need to work on?
I mean, what doesn't come so naturally to you? I mean, the enthusiasm, the leadership.
Being tougher, I think. Sometimes even my staff tells me that I need to be a little bit tougher. Sometimes, not all the time, because sometimes they can do whatever they want, you know, with me. Like I'm a little bit, in some cases, not in all cases, I'm sometimes a little bit too lenient and I forgive and forget things too easily. But as I told you, I see them as my family. I can't. I mean, how long can you be angry with your children? How long can you be angry with your siblings, you know? This is the way I feel like. I feel like Express is like my big sister, you know? So how long can I be angry with that? I can't. Not for long.
Okay. And how would you... So we talked about the culture of the company. So how would you describe it? I mean, you've already said a lot. But
for us, it's like a family... Family organization. It's like a living organization that expands and accumulates personalities, characters, ideas, innovation, and everybody puts a little stone, you know, into this beautiful wall of creativity, basically. That's the culture.
And that's the culture. So how about risk in your company? How do you manage risk? What's your attitude to risk? Are you more risk taker, risk averse? What's the balance?
I'm not very much of a risk taker, I have to say.
Okay.
More if I'm going to take risks, they're going to be calculated risks. I have to budget everything closely. I have to make sure that whatever we do, it's not going to go to waste. It's not going to be a flop product or anything like that. I'm not much of a risk taker, I have to admit. Sometimes, I mean, I did take a big risk, and so did Gina when we invested in digital learning. We did take a big risk back then, because back then when we started creating our IWB software, IWBs were not world spread. They weren't world known back then. And to be honest, when I saw the first demo material, I turned around to Gina and I said, are you crazy? Who's going to be able to use that? I mean, They have to be very computer literate to be able to do that. It turned out I was wrong, and I was very happily surprised about that, because it did go off as a spark. And nowadays, I see the same happening with the platform that I developed, which was basically another risk for me, the platform. And I developed that at a time where, again, people were not very familiar with platforms. It was just about the time where platforms started to pop up around the world. Only everybody was creating like a little apartment, kind of, if I can use this metaphor. I wanted to create a city. So it was kind of a big thing, what I had in my mind, and it keeps growing and growing. Oh, I started doing the research for that about 8-9 years ago, maybe a little, yeah, but let's say about roughly about 10 years ago. And the platform has been launched about 4 years ago, if I remember correctly, worldwide, and it's been rocketing, I have to say. All over the world, it's been rocketing, like especially now because of blended learning and because of the pandemic, we've been quadrupling our numbers on a monthly basis.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And tell me about the publishing industry at the moment. Well, we can talk about COVID. That's a very special case. But where is it going? Because maybe some people would think 10 years ago that, you know, IT was going to take over everything. But is there still a place for the printed book, and will there be in the future?
Absolutely. And this, what's happening right now is an experiment, which is test driving that theory. Because very easily we could say, okay, everyone's at home, no more material which is printed. Everything goes online. It doesn't work like that. You can't have a three-year-old child constantly online. You can't have even an adult constantly online. They need paper. They need penmanship. They need physical products too. The computer is something that they greatly appreciate. Yes, everything that's digitally, they appreciate that and they like that. But you can't go one way or the other completely. It has to be a very well balanced mix of both. Otherwise, either way, it gets boring.
Okay, so it's a little bit like when movies came along in the cinemas, or when radio came along, it was going to kill movies, and then TVs was going to kill radio. They all live together.
Everything works still in cohesion, you know. Nothing has eliminated one another.
So for our listeners there, that entrepreneurs, so writing as a career, what can you say?
It's very difficult, and I'll explain to you why it's very difficult. Because you have, and this is what I find most difficult about my work, you have to be ready to take your own baby, which is your creation, and shred it to pieces according to the demands of the market. Like, and I'm sure that if other authors are listening to us right now, they'll totally agree with me. When an author sits down, we make a plan in our head, okay? We say, like, we want our material to be like this and that and that and have this and that and that. And then different countries from around the world, different educators come from around the world, and they say, no, we don't want that. We want that. We wouldn't like to have this. We would like to have that. And they start tearing apart pieces from your work and reassembling it like a puzzle. And to my mind, sometimes this looks like a zombie, but somehow it works for them. So I have to say that there are certain points where I put my foot down and I say to them, no, guys, I'm not going to put my name on that. There's no way I'm going to create such amount of confusion in the original material. I'm not going to do that. I will create a zombie up to certain parts, but there are parts I'm not going to go to. There are areas I'm not going to touch. And I explain to them, not because I like it this way. There's a logic behind that. There are reasons behind that. So I'm always open to explain things, you know, to whoever, all the authorities who want to change material. But sometimes, you know, there are political, religious issues, you know, ethical issues that basically, you know, some countries, they say, okay, you can talk about crime in your material. Some countries say, no way, no, we can't talk about crime in the material. This is just an example to tell you. Some countries say we want, I don't know, lots of pictures in your material. Some countries say, no, don't put any pictures in your material. It depends, you know, it depends on their way of thinking, their way of teaching, their cultural backgrounds. It depends on lots of things. So that's one of the most difficult things that I find in writing. That, and sometimes I actually tell my teams, don't give me the shredded version. You know, I just want to see the original version sometimes, because I think that, you know, it's like changing a lot, you know, the original version. But anyway, what can you do? You have to work with that.
So how do you balance that? There's often calls, we're kind of in an age of diversity, equality, inclusion, and ELT is no stranger to that. I mean, there's a lot of research.
Because when I have to change something, even if I have to change something, what I'm going to put there instead of what I had originally has to be equally interesting, equally innovative, equally inspiring for the students, equally meaningful, equally methodologically sound. So with a lot of research and a lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm. So how do you balance the calls for diversity, inclusion, which is more kind of a Western thing, with, you know, more traditional societies? You just have to produce different content for different countries.
Yes,
is that
we
yeah?
We have to produce different content for different countries. Sometimes, most of the times, 70% to 90% of the original material changes. Yes. So basically, it's like creating a completely new product.
Just the sheer logistics of that, the whole, the management of that.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And you know what's crazier? Okay, I understand that, you know, if a country tells you, right, Express, we want the material to be like this, that, 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 and you got like, I don't know, 2-3 years to develop this material. Fair enough. No problem. I'll do it in 2-3 years. What's crazy is that you have countries coming to say to you, and ministers coming to say to you, you've got 7 days to do it. How can you change 90% of a book in 7 days plus all components? Beats me. But somehow, don't ask me how, I honestly think that we have like little creatures hiding in the corners here, because somehow, miraculously, we do it. Somehow, we manage to do it somehow.
But don't encourage people to ask for that. That's what you're saying.
No. Please don't kill us. Please don't kill us, because my little elves, I think I'm going to go on strike eventually.
Okay, so tell me about the market for ELT at the moment. We want to talk about the money. Where is the money in ELT at the moment that you see?
Where is the money? Well, a lot of local companies in each country are developing, so the pie is kind of spread thin right now. But here's the thing. English language, whether we like it or not, is a universal language right now. It's a key. So it's a kind of an industry that is never going to go away unless another language. I mean, we have to communicate with people in one language or another. Okay. So language learning is a steady kind of industry that you will always need to educate people. Of course, there are more and more players that are coming into existence, obviously, but this is the challenge. You have to be a step ahead. I mean, why would someone choose to use my products instead of another publishing houses? Why would someone prefer to use an Express publishing platform by comparison to another platform? Because now there are lots of platforms around. There are lots of courses. There are lots of material around. This is a challenge for us. We always have to be a step ahead. And I think we've managed that so far.
Okay, without giving away any secrets, how can you manage that? How can you stay a step ahead?
This is the secret recipe. It's in the broth, you know, it's in the mix. We use a lot of our, just a tip here, creativity. That's the only thing. I mean, you always have to think faster than everyone else. And act faster, too. That's also another secret.
Okay, so implementation, get it to market more quickly than the competitors. Okay, so tell me, Jenny, what we talked about motivation. I don't think you're lacking in motivation or passion or energy, but how do you keep going through tough times?
I go back into the drawing board, basically. I'm working, I'm using this time, this enclosure periods, to think about new products, to create new ideas, to expand on certain areas, to think of new ventures. And that's about it, basically. That and lots of video calls with my friends and maybe a little bit of wine over the internet. That's about it.
And as regards self-study, what do you take, any courses? Is there any books you can recommend?
Well, I just recently took a course on coaching, on neuro-language coaching with Rachel Panning. So but I did that before COVID time, and I'm actually thinking of joining another course right now. Although I have to admit that it has been very challenging, because I'm sure people who work at home will verify what I'm saying. When you work from home, you work double shifts. There's no end. I mean, when you work with real presence in the office, you know, you go to your office 9 to 5, that's about it. Maybe you'll get a couple of phone calls at night, that's about it. But when you're at home all the time and ideas come to you and meetings come to you, because you realize that with the time zones and the different countries, we have meetings and webinars and Skype calls and everything 24/7. Basically, even. So it has been quite exhausting working like that, I have to admit.
There's a bit of overwhelm.
Yes, it is. There is.
Okay. So what are your ideals?
That's a tough one. My ideals is basically to value the people you work with, I would say. To make sure that everybody feels happy in what they're doing, to let the creativity flow, to share and exchange ideas and not keep them to yourself, definitely. And to give chances to the young generation to show you their worth.
Okay, so... And you mentioned earlier about being able to listen to what people...
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yes. Definitely. Tell me about that skill.
I'm a very good listener. I always listen to my customers and their needs. I listen to the ideas that the employees give me. I always ask for suggestions before I make decisions. Obviously, I have like the vision and I tell them, okay, I want to do this. Give me some suggestions, give me some ideas, you know. I'm never going to say, okay, I want to do this and I want to do it this way. Go implement it. I don't like doing that. I like to discuss things with people. That way, everybody feels like they're valued too. And I do value their opinions. It's not something that I do for just, you know, to make them feel good. I do value their opinions because I'm not God, you know. I'm not an all-knowing, an all-seeing being. Obviously, I've got faults too. Also, I've got, you know, weaknesses too, but maybe someone else has a better idea than me and we can exchange these ideas and share these ideas. So, yeah, why not?
Okay. And going back, what lessons have you learned? What mistakes have you made? What advice would you give to? What mistakes have you made first?
What mistakes have I made? Well... Sometimes I became too passionate about a product and I wouldn't let go in the beginning. That was in my early stages, my early years. And I didn't want people to tamper with my original idea. So I had to learn the hard way that if you go, you know, close-minded into something and you don't open up and be susceptible to different ways of thinking, you might fall flat on your face. So I had... I was taught that lesson quite early, but I think that one of the most precious lessons that I've learned working in this field is that take all cultures into account, take diversity into account. When I go into any country to deliver a seminar or train teachers or whatever, you know, I don't just go and disassociate myself from that culture. I try to become part of that culture. whether that means learning some words from that culture, going out and observing people, living with people, asking about their own culture. I'm fascinated and I want to take into account cultures from all over the world. And I think I incorporate it in my material too. So that's one of the lessons that life has taught me, you know.
Okay.
Be open to new cultures.
Okay. So a very good point, cross-cultural communication. So what would you do when the planes start up again and you land, and maybe it's a country you haven't been before, what kind of preparation would you do?
I've got my suitcase packed already. I'm going to tell you that. Okay? My suitcase is always packed. I don't know. I just want to go back into the field, basically. Go meet my friends. Because I consider educators all over the world, and every time I meet anyone, they're my friend. We become friends. We become not just associates, but we actually like spending time with each other's company. You know, we like exchanging and sharing ideas. We learn from each other, and I miss my friends. I miss them. I mean, okay, obviously I talk to them through Skype and through phone calls and WhatsApps and so on. Fair enough, but it's not the same, you know. I want to be in their countries again. I want to feel, you know, the atmosphere again, that same atmosphere of the convention. And I miss that. Obviously, I miss that.
So tell me about some big wins you've had in your career.
Big wins? I don't know. I mean, okay, some of our material has become a milestone for changing the way language has been taught. Like, for example, when we started creating with Gina our first grammar series, before that time, grammar was very stale and black and white, and we created more colorful approach to teaching aspects of the language back then, you know, like grammar. I think that a big win has been the way we deliver our academic talks and the way we approach people, where we give them practical tips. And that's why our seminar rooms are always full, I would say. Getting to know associates from all around the world, I think that has been a personal win for me, because I get to be taught lots of things by all the people that I meet from all around the world, especially people from our field. I don't know, other wins, I don't know. I'm quite proud of my platform, to be honest, because that's my baby. So I consider that to be a very big win for me. And financially, it has paid off too. Everything has been paying off. So I'm quite content with that.
Okay. So you measure success not just financially. I mean,
by far and away.
Mm. Okay.
For me, the best currency is knowledge. So the more knowledge I obtain, the richer I am.
For someone who's looking to monetize the business, looking to focus more on money, what kind of tips, what kind of discipline should people have?
To find a sponsor who believes in them and convince them, passionately convince them about it. Like, you definitely need to find partners who are either already in the field that you're interested in, or partners who are ready to become parts of that field. And you need to be passionate about them in order to convince them about this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so find partners already that are in the field.
Yes.
Okay. Can you give me an example from, you don't have to give specifics about names, but how this has worked for you?
I can give you a very broad example. For example, in our company, one of our policies is not to open up our own offices around the world. One of our policies is to find partners, locals from the countries who might already be established in the field, and work closely with them because we believe that they know their country better than we do. And yes, of course, we can hire people to go and do market research and all of that, but these people are going to be there and take a snapshot, and that's about it. For a month, a couple of months, that's it. A country has a culture, and this culture is alive, and things keep changing constantly. So having people who understand their own culture and their own countries, I think that helps a lot. So local hands help.
Work with local partners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Work with local partners. Be aware of local traditions, laws, etc. Yes, and yes. You mentioned earlier being a nimble company, so being able to turn things around quickly, obviously with production deadlines. And tell me a little bit about being flexible, being nimble in business. How do you, with 500 employees, how do you manage that?
Obviously, they're not in the same department. They're in different departments, and we split them in different meetings and different parts of the day about different things. That's how most companies are run anyway. The thing is that you need to, as I said earlier, you need to be flexible and open-minded into new ideas and new suggestions. And at the same time, you need to be aware that you are not deviating a lot from your own personal vision, because you can't go astray very quickly. Like, if you think, okay, I'm going to start creating a publishing company dealing with EFL materials, but then some partner comes along and convinces you to invest in, I don't know, summer schools around the world, and you start investing a lot of money in that, you can fall, you know, through with that. That's dangerous. You have to be sure of the steps that you're taking. You have to be aware. You have to know what it is that you're going to be doing. I mean, that's my personal opinion. Okay, other people might disagree with that, but that's my personal opinion. You need to know your job inside out. Otherwise, find someone who does to partner with. You know what I mean?
Well, I think, Jenny, from the guests I've been talking to over the past few weeks, that seems to be a common thing. It's, you know, don't chase after new dreams. Get the stuff in front of you out of the way first. Concentrate on what you know. Absolutely. Rather than spreading yourself too thin.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. If you do want to venture out to new dreams, make sure that these new dreams are somehow related to the ones that you're running currently, somehow.
And how do you stop yourself from doing that?
As I said, you know, little things, I go into risks. Big things, I have second thoughts about.
So you mentioned earlier calculated risk.
Yes.
What is a calculated risk?
A calculated risk is you have to make sure of what you're going to develop and if it's going to have a good response in the market and who is your potential buyer, and try to think of a budget. Don't exceed a lot your budget. It's all about numbers, basically. Okay. And B, make sure that when you create something, you believe in that product that you create so you can sell it properly.
Okay. Okay, and you also mentioned that you like to branch off into new areas. Maybe you have new ideas for books. So from what you currently publish, you currently produce, to something new, how do you make that transition?
Oh, well, if we're talking about ELT, it comes easily to me because just, you know, another idea comes along and I start, you know, creating the new product. If we're talking about something which is completely different, like what I told you earlier, like the subject books, someone needs to give me a gentle nudge. Someone needs to show me that this is going to be a profitable outcome, and whatever I'm going to do is going to somehow give me some benefit somewhere, everywhere, you know. So that's what I mean when I say calculated risks. I wouldn't just, you know, jump into the new idea without thinking about the numbers.
Okay. So apart from what you mentioned earlier, which was your company culture, and so what sets you apart from your competitors, do you think?
Quality.
Okay.
Not quantity, quality.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. This is what, with my hand in my heart, I would definitely tell you quality.
Okay.
Because we make sure that our material is always of top quality.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how do you ensure quality? Tell me about that.
We pilot it, we check it, we test it, we have it assessed by external people. We always take the opinion of people who have used our material before, for example, and they tell us, you know, whether we're going on the right track or not sometimes. That's the only way. I mean, and of course, it has happened a few times in the past where we reach the end of a product, and right about when the product is about to be printed, I stop it. And I'm like, no, I'm not happy with this. I'm going back to the drawing board. Like at the last minute, literally. Virginia and I have done that numerous times, and that sends my people crazy, you know, literally. Yeah, they don't like that at all, I can tell you that. But it has to happen. You know, sometimes, okay, I don't want to sound pompous here or something, but creating educational material in a way, okay, in a very small way, it's a little bit like art, okay? There are rules and regulations when you paint a face, for example, for a portrait, okay, you have to be symmetric or asymmetric according to specific things. There are rules and regulations there. There are rules and regulations in my field too. So I follow these rules and regulations, but I put my heart in it, you know, I put my soul in it, I put my art in it. And I always make sure that the end product that comes out is the way I like it to be. If it's not the way I like it, I will stop it. I will not produce it.
It reminds me of a story. When I lived in China, the founder of the Haier factory, they used to sell a terrible product, and he came to the factory one day with a sledgehammer and smashed up the washing machine, or I can't remember what it was, tumble dryer, and said, "We're never making something like this again." So it's kind of same idea. You just say, "Okay, we're yanking it from the at the last minute," and this is. This is we believe in excellence, and that's it.
Absolutely,
no compromise on that. So, how about fear?
Would fear you deal of failing. With that? Everybody has that fear, the fear of failing. That you the way I see something is not the way the rest of the world will see something. But again, that's up to my skill to convince the world of my point of view. You see, when I mean everyone has their own point of view, but that's my job to show them that my way, my point of view is the right way, the right point of view because of certain elements and certain aspects. So that's what I do the teacher training for.
Okay. Okay. So you mentioned earlier about being proven wrong on one occasion, at least, and that actually turned out to be a success. So,
true.
Tell me about learning from that. You know, being proven wrong. What did you learn from that?
I learned to listen more.
Okay.
And I learned to trust people more from that, because when I thought that the world was not ready for such a product, it turned out that the world was ready for such a product, and I learned my lesson to be quiet and listen to my elders at the time.
So listen to other people involved, listen to employees, listen to directors.
Listen to employees and listen to people who are more experienced than you.
Yes.
That's a very valuable lesson.
That's something I spoke about to Ron Moraine earlier. And well, this will be probably a week before in podcast world, but he said about humility. We talked about humility, and
that's important.
Yeah, tell me how that relates to where you've come from.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a story, and I think that might touch a nerve. I remember years ago, like 35, 36 years ago, when we went to our first Frankfurt book exhibition back then, Express Publishing was a little unimportant, non-existent blip in the map of the world. Nothing. So I remember we were trying to make appointments and talk to ELT experts back then, and talk to different colleagues and different publishers, and, you know, exchange and share ideas. And nobody would actually give us the time of day back then. Nobody. It was very frustrating to begin with, and it made us become a little bit more stubborn, let's put it like that, okay? This especially was proven from Gina. She was like, okay, I'm going to make it on my own, kind of thing, you know? So, and we did. We did make it on our own. So the lesson I've learned from that is no matter who comes to your stand, always listen to them because they deserve the time of your day, no matter what. These people, you don't know who these people are going to be in the future. Whoever can join your company or give you an idea that might flourish later on into something magnificent. So don't turn away anyone ever. That's the lesson of humility for me.
That reminds me of another Chinese story. If you go to China, you'll probably hear this. And and they went to, I think it was maybe Nanjing Street in Shanghai. And there's three girls, and they went, and they weren't so well dressed, but they went to the showroom, maybe Louis Vuitton, and they started picking out these dresses, and they said, one, two. So they had three, four dresses like this. And the shop assistant approached them, you know, kind of disdainfully and looking down the nose. And she said, are you going to buy those dresses? And one of the girls says, no, we're not going to buy these dresses, but we're going to buy all the other dresses. Oh. Yeah. So it's a little bit like that, you know, just, yeah, you can't really judge it, can you?
And
you have to be open maybe to.
Everyone counts. Every single opinion counts. Everyone has a purpose in this life. And everyone has a purpose.
Okay. And tell me about when you're not working. How do you recharge? Other than traveling, we know that.
Yeah. But, well, clearly, I have my hobbies, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I like, actually, my hobby started in one of my travels. Well, yes, when I went to Latin America in the beginning, of my career, the teachers, my wonderful friends in Latin America, saw it fit to teach me how to dance salsa. Back then, I had two left feet, but now I think I'm quite skilled. And now when I go back, I teach them how to dance salsa.
So salsa, you like, that's kind of your passion, kind of yes. be able to unwind. So we talk about adjusting to the COVID situation. What has, other than the traveling and the, you know, the trade fairs, all that. So management of your company, how have you been able to manage it through COVID?
Oh, my God, by thinking quickly on my feet, literally, because laws and regulations change every single day. And this is, if there's one thing I'm angry about during this pandemic, and I'm not saying it's serious because it's deadly serious. I see it as that deadly serious problem. But what I find excruciatingly frustrating is the fact that since this is the first time we're ever facing this, governments in their own right, they don't know how to handle this. So every single day, they're announcing something new. Every single day, 10% of the personnel has to stay at home, 50%, 70%, come back, don't come back, open this, close this, reopen this, time schedules change. People, literally my HR department is going bananas, literally. Okay. I mean, the papers and the bureaucracy that we have to do on a daily basis to keep everyone in the line of law is crazy. That's the problem that we've been facing lately. And of course, the same goes with all our experts and all our partners around the world, because you have to understand that in our field, human contact, it's extremely important. Yes, okay, they're going to talk to people over the phone and do webinars and so on, but it's completely different because teaching is a social skill, okay? It's completely different when you go and see the teacher face-to-face or the school or even the students. I even miss the students. When I used to travel, they used to take me to schools and I used to see the students. And they write to me now on Facebook, these students, my fans, let's call them like that, okay? And I miss that. I miss seeing them. I miss talking to them face-to-face. Everybody misses that. It's not just me, I think. And that's the difficulty we've been facing, the difficulty of having to constantly change things in the company. I mean, I remember one day I told them, okay, everybody calm. We're going to try to work things together. I don't want to hear anybody who wants to leave the offices and go to work home. And like 3 hours later, I literally told them, come on, everyone, and pick up your computers from the office because everyone's working from home for the next 3 months. So you have to think on your toes constantly. You have to think of new ways of working in this environment, because you never know what's going to happen. You never know how things are going to change. We're still waiting to be vaccinated, you know?
Yeah. And for you mentioned new ideas, new ventures. What's, without giving away any secrets, what's the next step for Express? Where are you going?
That I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
I can't tell you that because I'm going to jinx it. Let's put it like that. No, this has been an issue with even my employees here. You know, only the need to know people know about the new ventures. The rest find out when they're ready to be launched, basically. And they're angry with me about that because I never tell them my plans and my ideas. But everybody has to wait for the new things to come along. I mean, it'll be like Santa, you know? You don't know what you're going to get from Santa. You wish for things, but you might get something else. So there you go.
It'll be a happy surprise when it comes out. So if you had to, if our one of our listeners want to get in contact with Express, perhaps we have some listeners who want to get into writing, for example.
Yeah. We do have a site. We have a site, an Express Publishing site, and it has it's expresspublishing.co.uk. And in there is an inquiries email, so they can get in touch with us through the inquiries email. And yeah, we can have a look at their ideas and their material or whatever.
And as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, you're very, very open, very progressive company, and very forward looking. So you personally, Jenny, are you on LinkedIn or Facebook or any of these? Is there a place that people can contact?
I am on Facebook as my name, Jenny Dooley, and I am on LinkedIn too. You'll find me there too. I think I'm on Twitter too, but I don't check it very frequently. I don't have time for social media. Basically Facebook is the best way to get in touch with me.
Okay, yeah. Great. And so if you had some parting words for our budding entrepreneurs or people who have launched something, what advice would you give them?
Dream on, but dream safe. Follow your dreams, but make sure you keep it to a minimum risk level. That would be my words of wisdom, if you want there. But don't stop dreaming, for sure. Don't stop dreaming, because I made my dream come true. So I think that if I did it, everybody can do it.
Okay. And just a reminder to everybody, Jenny's company is Express Publishing, and the website is expresspublishing.co.uk. And that covers all. Okay. And thank you very much today. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast as much as I have.
Thank you very much. It was great. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the EFL Magazine Business Podcast with Philip Pound. For more great advice and resources, check out eflmagazine.com. If you found this podcast helpful, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. See you next time.